write a book about cities like Lowell and Worcester. It always gets my dander up a little. I tell them that I spent most of my life in smaller Rust Belt cities. I grew up in the Syracuse area, and I spent many years in Rochester, New York, Albany, New York, and the mothership, the Rust Belt mothership of Detroit. And over the course of my lifetime, I watched these places fall apart. But I also remember when they were still vital. I was very young, but I do remember. When department stores still anchored their downtowns, and kids went to private school only because they were super rich or Catholic. Over the course of, as I grew into an adult and a historian and journalist, I marveled at the resurgence of big cities like New York, Chicago, and Boston, meaning Greater Boston. But I also noticed with mounting despair that smaller cities, by which I mean cities of about 40 to 400,000 people, small to mid-sized cities, were not only dying, but were dropping out of the urban conversation altogether. Today, smaller cities are not only ignored, but all too often they are conflated with small towns. And that way they are rendered invisible as cities with urban problems and urban opportunities, urban markets, urban virtues. Once you see this, you really do see it everywhere. And I'll give you an example of what I mean about small cities being conflated with small towns. A couple of years ago, the New England Patriots played in the Super Bowl, as some of you may remember, in Indianapolis. And the Boston Globe hyped an article on the inside of the paper, on the front page, that said, there are a surprising number of things to do in a small town like Indianapolis. Indianapolis has a population of about 800,000 people. It's larger than Boston proper. Strictly speaking, Boston. Small, Pretty, and Green is the first book-length study of these types of smaller industrial cities as a class, as a type of city, to be published since 1979. That alone speaks volumes to just how invisible they've become among our contemporary urban tastemakers. So it's fair to say that over the past 35 years or so, a sort of big city bias set in among our most influential urban theorists and bi-coastal media elites. People like Richard Florida, Edward Glaser, who writes so often for the New York Times, and Enrico Moretti. And they were very much influenced by several generations of urbanists were influenced by Jane Jacobs, whose work I greatly admire. But let's be clear, the title of her most well-known book, a groundbreaking book, was The Death and Life of Great American Cities. And that was published in 1961. And, most urbanists since then cut their intellectual eye teeth on that work, which argued for the superiority of largely growing cities, and was pretty dismissive of small cities. She called them dull, among other adjectives. Interesting to know what she'd say today and view what's happening in places like Lowell. In any case, I digress. Not surprisingly, this big city bias paralleled the rise of neoliberalism, which saw the flight of American manufacturing overseas and concentrated the growing financial and knowledge sectors in large cities. In this way of thinking, this sort of big city bias, big cities developed models for how cities in general work. And it is assumed that smaller cities, if they're wise, will simply follow their lead. And so, they've been told, and they